Welcome, everybody! Let's take all this massive swirling love energy and ground it into the present for just a moment. So let's just take a breath. Practice being mindful. Become aware of the sensations in our body right now. The sounds you hear. The temperatures on your skin. The pressure on your seat and on your feet as they touch the ground. When we practice coming into the present, experiencing the now, purely free from stories, free from regret, free from worry, free from anxiety, when we just practice experiencing the now, we gain a discipline over our thoughts, we gain a discipline over life. Life is infinite. There is only now, and it is eternal. And then we can start to pull into this now the thoughts, the memories, the experiences, the emotions that make life rich. We become the script writers of our now, creating absolute joy. And then that joy becomes a vibration that instructs reality on how to lay the path in front of us. Thank you, universe, for the now. Help us to appreciate all the gifts. Fill us with love and joy so we may spread love and joy in the world. Amen. Well, sorry, let me get a little adjustment here on my... Wow. A week ago today, I returned from Burning Man. Physically. I am still filled with dust in my nasal passages, in my gut, in my veins, most of my house, my courtyard, everything I own. Hopefully that lasts as long as possible. It was a significant year for me. It was my 15th year at Burning Man, and it's been really fun to reflect on how it has been a different experience for me, still pushing me and challenging me in ways that still scare me. And I want to talk a little bit about some of those things today and try to kind of solidify some of the lessons. The topic of the day as it came to me was, be a righteous prick. Let me take a few steps back. When I first went to Burning Man 15 years ago, it blew my mind as far as the freedom of it, the radical self-expression, the highlighting how there were all these amazing ways that I could live that were different from what I was exposed to and what I knew about. And that was enough to change my life. Early back, most of my gifts were about outfits and dressing up and trying to add to the visual landscape. That was kind of how I really embraced gifting initially. And, you know, I gave little trinkets and I would make videos trying to highlight and not necessarily explain Burning Man, but try to capture some of the magic that I felt, some of the lessons like surrender or learning to really express myself. And I shared much of this experience with my grandpa because he's so groovy and awesome and amazing. And something happened as he started to really understand Burning Man. First, he started giving me things to bring to the burn. He gave me my grandmother's Bible to bring and burn in the temple as a way to let go of that. When I did my first marriage ceremony at the temple, he gave me his tattered, decades-old Bible that he had used in thousands of wedding ceremonies. And even though he knew that Burning Man was not a Christian church, he recognized that it was my church, and it was the most sacred thing in my life. Even though at that time, I had not really embraced it in that same way. But by him doing so, by him really seeing that this was my sacred space, this was my church, this was my congregation, this is my community, this is the place that I recharged, recalibrated, realigned with the path of an ideal, loving life. He was the one that basically gave me permission to say, it's more than a party. This is your center. This is your church.
Have you never noticed that the great people of history have spent night in the desert? And the whole Old Testament is just full of Bible experiences in the desert. Jeremiah, Isaiah, all the prophets, and Jesus spent time in the desert.
And so I did kind of step it up and start to treat it more that way and started to write about it more that way, and it became more in my life about this spiritual center. And it's interesting, this last year, specifically, that awareness kicked up a notch. I just watched the video from 2007 that Yahoo put together where they did a highlight. They filmed Grandpa to do a story on him, and while they were editing it, he passed away. And so part of the story was looking at me and me saying things like, I don't know if I'm going to keep doing Hug Nation.
John wonders if Hug Nation can continue once Caleb is gone.
And sometimes I doubt that I'm the right person to be spreading a message like that. My grandpa is. He's my vessel to do good things. And it's really, it was beautiful to watch that now, you know, years later, and see how I have shifted and how much grandpa's presence in me has grown to where I feel very much that I am supposed to be doing Hug Nation. I am supposed to be doing my best to align with the same light that he worked to align with. For him, it was Christ, the man, as embodying the divine. And for me, it's Christ consciousness, as it is embodied in many things and people. And this year on the playa, I had a number of experiences that really cranked up the sacredness and the divinity of that place and of my role, maybe all of our roles in that and in our lives. Just for me, the playa highlights it so significantly. I had an amazing number of people come up to me needing to reflect back the awarenesses or the love or the gifts that I had projected through video in their path to get to where they were. And so they came back to me and showered it back to me and relayed what a significant role I played in their path to get to this point. Now, they walked the path. You know, they're doing the journey. They are making the growth. But, you know, for whatever reason, I was able to play a role in helping them get to this place. And their gratitude was, you know, an honor beyond, you know, understanding, really. It was just this energetic, wow. And then I also met with a lot of people who had been going through grieving. The tears that I felt on my shoulder while at Burning Man was more than I've ever experienced in any, you know, set period of time in my life. This release, you know, people would tell me stories of relatives or friends that they've lost in the last few months. And, you know, for whatever reason, the videos that I've talked about death or grandpa helped them to process it, to bring some of those hard to express feelings to the playa, to let go, to say goodbye, to swim in gratitude, and to hopefully practice that reverence for their memory, practice that bringing the happy things. No matter what, you know, tragic things stopped a life, the practice is bringing the smiles, bringing the lessons into your always now. And not making your memories about that person or experience about the painful ending of it, or long ending of it, or whatever it is. And I also had a number of people, a handful of people, that stopped me mid-conversation, mid-talking, looked me in the eye, held my shoulder, and told me of a powerful role that I need to play, about a stepping up that is required of me. And on two occasions that this happened, my body filled with tingles, like like I was full of energy, and I'm getting that feeling right now as I say it. Wow. And it was a strange experience because I was having an experience that was outside of my belief system. I don't think that that happens, where someone sees you, recognizes some divine path in you, tells it to you, and then you fill with tingles. But that happened multiple times. And so I've been trying to accept that role, I think, that we all are asked to play. Jacob Glass once said that there's one question that the universe is asking you in every single moment. Are you ready yet? Are you ready yet to play your role? Are you ready yet? Are you ready yet to live out and enact God's plan? Are you ready yet? Are you ready yet? And I guess I'm learning now that what you're ready for is constantly changing. And what seemed like a massive step into responsibility, a massive leap, now was the first step. And we keep getting asked to take the next step as we're ready. I had a meeting yesterday, kind of a coaching with someone who saw me on the playa, felt something in me, said, you come from this lineage, you have all these people behind you. She saw, you know, Martin Luther King, and I'm like, right, you know, I told her about my grandfather working with Martin Luther King, and she's like, oh my gosh, I just saw him behind you with your grandfather. And I was like, this is outside of my worldview, but I'm surrendering and letting go and being less attached to the specifics of what I believe reality is and allowing these things to happen. And so I met with her yesterday, and I was struggling because, I mean, I'm like, you know, there's a video I did a couple months ago called I'm a Fuck Up, I'm Divine, where I recognize that, dude, I'm as human as they get. I make the biggest mistakes. I get into jealousy. I make all the same. I am human. And yet at times, I now more and more feel like I am absolutely in line with the vibration of divine, of pure love, of Christ consciousness. And so it is those both roles that I play. And as I was talking to her, I was like, you know, I mean, on the playa, I definitely felt at times when I was playing that this higher role for some people, and it was hard because, I mean, like, you know, I'm not Jesus, you know, I'm not the Messiah. And she looked at me and she just kind of went, and I guess I corrected myself and I said, well, I'm not the Messiah, I'm a Messiah, as we all are. And it's a hard thing for me to step into, because if you have been following or listening for a long time, a big part of how I speak is by I think this, this happened to me. You know, the whole belief buffet is because I feel like, who am I to say any truth for anyone else? And as I kind of told her this story about, who am I to say, trust me? And as I told her the story, I realized that that was an old story, and that I'm now at a point in my path where there are times when I think that I should say, trust me. I'm speaking to you. John, the fuck up human, is speaking to you, but he's relaying things that were very clear when divine energy and source was resonating with him and with us, with me, with all of us, and I'm here to assure you that it's going to be okay, that you're doing beautifully, you're perfect, you're beautiful, you need to forgive yourself and others, or whatever these things are. Trust me. And that request or that assurance is not coming from an ego place of trust me to help me realize something. It's trust me, I can see the crust that is keeping you from your truth, and you're going to get through it. And I realize, you know, as I struggle with that, that one of the things I'm afraid of is, just as years ago I was afraid of somebody seeing me in, you know, fur pants and going, oh my God, who does he think he is? And that as I say, trust me, you are love and light and perfection, that someone's going to say, oh my God, who does he think he is? But I've been doing a lot of work on my ego, and I know that I am not that, in any more than any of us are. We are all the one. We are all divine. We are one thing. We are just one thing. That is so clear to me now, and I've realized that I simply cannot communicate the way that I understand that. I don't have the words, but I have the absolute awareness. So one of the challenges is, if even dangling and pawing at and experimenting with that awareness is that, kind of sound like a righteous prick. And I found myself over the last week getting into conversations or confrontations or calling bullshit on things that I just felt responsible to. I felt like my truth is not in alignment with what is happening right here. And so even though it is not harmony, even though it may make people uncomfortable, or maybe people think, like, who the fuck does he think he is? That it is important. It is part of what I'm being asked to do, is to simply stand in my truth. I'm not attached to how, you know, anyone receives it. That's not up to me. You know, I don't need you to believe me. I don't need you to change your behavior. I simply need to step into my truth so that I can have integrity in this moment, so I can be present, so I can align with love. Always going back to that. Be present, have integrity, align with love. And for me, that have integrity is when I feel that this is something that you are not in alignment with and you should say something, then I have to say something. And it's happened a few times this week. There was one time when there's a certain group that I'm a part of that I love their Hunter S. Thompson harsh criticism of the status quo. But they posted one thing where they used the term cum dumpsters to be derogatory towards sorority girls. And I was like, clearly I'm never the target audience for this person or this voice, but I'm gonna speak up. And so I said, look, I recognize that you're not, you know, even started it by saying, I'm not trying to be liked, but, you know, they recognize that it was a cruel thing to say. But I was like, look, your voice, your message is diluted and is weakened when you take cheap shots like that. I mean, there's a lot of things in this world that deserve criticism. There's a lot of cruelty. There's a lot of selfishness. And taking shots at those things, like Hunter S. Thompson did so often, is a valuable thing. But if you also take shots at the innocent, if you also take cheap shots and are abusive or cruel to behavior that we shouldn't be judging, like sexual attitudes and sexual activity, it just weakens everything. And I think that's actually one of the challenges that Hunter S. Thompson had, that when he did not show compassion towards the innocents, and so by blanket cruelty or attacking, you lose the power of your channeled criticism. And so I spoke up, and it became this big conversation. I felt like I had to. And I recognized that I sounded like a righteous prick. And then I saw somebody post their profile picture on their Facebook page was them holding a electric saw and the top of a street sign at Burning Man. They just chopped off the entire pole to steal the street signs. And they were so proud of it that they made it their profile picture. And all these people were like, yeah, right on. And I was like, what? Now, I said, this is, you know, it's not okay. And they posted, you know, oh, actually the ranger said it was fine. And all these people were like, it's totally cool. It's tradition. And I was like, what? I mean, because something is tradition does not mean that it's okay. There was a tradition in this country to, you know, lynch black people. And we realized, wait a minute, that's not okay. That's maybe an extreme example. But in my own life, I can remember when I thought it was okay to call people fag. Now I know it's not. And so I do better. And there was all these people that were like, because I started a thread where I asked Burning Man, I'm like, is this okay? You know, like, and a lot of people were, and then so there was a big kind of, some people like criticized me, like, why are you being such a hater? Why are you being so harsh? Why are you picking her out and being cruel to her, you know? And then there was a lot of like, look, we're allowed to do it. And the reality of the situation is that there is no policy at Burning Man. In fact, Burning Man made a statement where they said, we are unwilling to fight this practice that people have of stealing the signs at the end of the event. Our request and our desire and our hope is that people wait until the end to do this, because there's so many things that the street signs facilitate, such as, you know, emergency vehicles, such as exodus, such as, you know, people getting lost and finding their way home. Like, clearly, wait until the end of the event. And the problem is people heard that as like, we're allowed to steal them when the event's over. And people defined that as whenever they want it, which for some people is Saturday. They also asked people if you're going to steal the signs to replace them. And chopping off the entire top of it, it's like, ah. And so I felt like, you know, I think this is a wrong practice. I think that our expressions at Burning Man are supposed to be gifts. And this clearly is not a gift, you know? And so if it requires me standing up and being a righteous prick to get the conversation going, then that's the role that I felt like I had to play. You know, I made the argument that, look, if it's just a matter of not understanding, then we need to spread the word. Like, a ton of people got their bike stolen this year at Burning Man. Surprising number. Some from inside camps, some even locked bikes, but it really, the era of not of being able to leave your bike unlocked and expect it not to be stolen is over at Burning Man. One of the reasons possibly why is because there are communal bikes there. And so, I mean, after I saw this misunderstanding about street signs, I'm like, maybe there's a misunderstanding that if a bike is unlocked, you're welcome to ride it around as long as you, you know, whatever, leave it for somebody later. I don't know. But if that is the case, then I would definitely take a picture of someone doing such a thing and highlight it and say, this is wrong. Righteous prick. And then a couple days later, I got a PDF file sent to me that's saying, you know, the Westboro Baptist Church is going to be protesting a funeral in San Diego tomorrow morning. It's like midnight. And if you're not familiar with the Westboro Baptist Church, it's a cartoonishly evil group. They are the God Hates Fags group. They protest funerals. Initially, they protested gay soldiers, but now they protest all, or at least they're willing to protest all soldiers' funerals because they believe that the United States is being punished by God for its acceptance of homosexuality. They protest all sorts of things. They protest, I mean, it's comical, almost. In fact, there was a part of me that was like, I would love to see in the eyes of someone who actually believes the words that I'm reading. It's crazy to call yourself a church and make your mission about hate. Now, it's unclear if what the real intention of this group is. For some have said that it's just full of lawyers who will try to instigate people to get pushed, and then they sue and they make a lot of money, and that's, you know, it's a money generating organization. Someone suggested that it actually plays the role of uniting people. You need to have villains in stories. Whatever the case, I decided that I was going to go, and that this was a clear case of there being darkness, and regardless of the Westboro, whatever they do, there was a family that was going to be having a funeral the next day and trying to mourn the memory of somebody that they loved, and they were going to have to deal with this darkness. And how do you eliminate darkness? You bring light. So I felt like it's my responsibility as a righteous prick to bring as much light as I could. And so we organized and met at this local coffee shop, and I think there was like 12 of us or so. We went down the Hugmobile, and as we drove up the cemetery, there's another, there's the, are they called the Patriot, oh, I'm messing on the name. I think Monkey's in the audience, and maybe he can tell me the name of them. The Patriot Guard, I think, is what they're called, which is a bunch of bikers that this is what they do. They get the call, there's a protest going, they come together as a group, they protect the funerals, they rev their engines to overcome any sort of hateful speech that's happening. They escort the families and they protect the experience of this transition. And so we were stopped, and the pink, you know, RV was stopped, like, what are you doing here? I'm like, we're here to form a love wall. And they're like, are you from Westboro Baptist? We're like, no, we're on your side. It's like, let us in. And so then we joined this line of people that was short-haired military people, scruffy bikers, and pink-dressed Hug Nation folk. We weren't flamboyantly pink because it was a funeral, but it was a pretty magical line of people that were united in their desire to spread light. So magical that it makes me wonder, is that the... Could Westboro be intentionally creating such a dark spot that it allows these diverse people to unite in light? I can't really fathom that, but that is what happened. Now, in this situation, it was a best-case scenario. Westboro did not get a permit. They did not show up. And so we were there in this line as the family arrived, and they got to see, no matter what they heard might happen, what there was this crowd of strangers that were there to support and love them and honor their son. One of the neat things about that experience was, you know, there's a part of me that was like, wow, it's going to be a good versus evil, Hug Nation versus the Westboro Church. You know, this is what we're here for, is to fight darkness. But actually, it's not about the fight. It's not about the destination. It's not about the distance traveled. It's about the direction. And in this moment, the righteous path was showing up. And so I felt like we all did the right thing. And that's all you can do in any moment. In that moment, be present, have integrity, align with love. What's the next moment? It's showing up. What's the next path? It's doing this. What's the next thing? Maybe it's do the dishes. What's the next thing? Maybe it's speaking up and saying, that's insensitive. Now, Burning Man this year was filled with high highs. And being faced with the most impressive displays of humanity that, you know, I ever have seen. Seeing people wake up, seeing people come from lifestyles and lives that were dark and painful, and seeing them wake up to their new awareness of who they are and their gifts. I'm getting chills. But it's also a place where massive freedom sometimes leads people astray. And there is a unknown part of this event that we don't really know as a community how to deal with this sometimes. When people cross the line, when people, you know, take down the signs when they shouldn't, when people destroy art, when people steal a bike, when people cross the line physically or sexually with someone. Sometimes there's this feeling of, look, well, it's Burning Man, you know. Whoa, you crossed the line, baby. Don't do that anymore. And my camp had an experience that we had to deal with in that regards. I'm sure a lot of camps did. People get intoxicated on many things. Some people choose alcohol, which is traditionally a poor tool for keeping you on the righteous path. And a person in our camp who had made a lot of women feel uncomfortable got really drunk and poured oil on a woman, was demanding to massage her, was pulling her clothes off her. And she felt violated. And when it was brought to me, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like, how are we going to deal with this? And she's like, she decided she is going to file a report. And my first thought was, oh my gosh, that's going to hurt the whole event. That's going to, you know, it's going to make us look bad. It's going to make the event look bad. I had these thoughts like that. And the more she spoke and the more we talked, the more clear it became that this was important. It does not weaken the love. It does not weaken the connection. It does not weaken the freedom. It actually strengthens it. When you defend your borders, when you defend your principles, you allow for more magic, more warmth, more love within those walls. If we know that everybody knows it's wrong if you do this, then when somebody starts to approach in a certain way, you know that your word, that your calm love, you don't have to build up a defense against that. You know that it's wrong. And if anybody crosses it, the community will rally behind you to shut down anything that is unacceptable. And so we had a dark couple of days. We had a campmate taken from the camp and ejected from the event, arrested in handcuffs. And it was a beautiful thing, because it was the way that our family, our camp, needed to defend ourselves, defend our family, acknowledge that the world is light and dark. And when you protect the light, it can be so much brighter and warmer. And so I am so grateful for the courage of the woman who decided to not let this pass and become just like, well, it's Burning Man, I'll get over it. Because it allows all of the women and all the people to expose ourselves a little more, to allow ourselves to trust a little more. I talk about the optimism tax sometimes, you know, where if you trust the world, sometimes you're going to get screwed. But it is a great corollary to the optimism tax to know that sometimes the world and you need to defend yourself so that you can keep trusting and knowing that that tax can be refunded, can be stood up for, that the system itself will say, no, you don't always. I mean, you can trust, and you can say, as someone is taking your wallet, go, no, you got to go. Sometimes love is saying no. Sometimes love is saying enough. Sometimes love is saying when something is sacred, you have to defend it. So it was a week of spiritual highs. It was a week of organizational challenges. It was a week of seeing a vision that my 85-member camp created. And it was a week of seeing virgins blossom into the most beautiful flowers, seeing an identity of a camp come together and a family grow and overcome adversity. And I think that all of us, as we get in touch with what our truth is, we have to start playing the role of righteous pricks. We have to start saying, the world that I want to live in is one where we reach out, is one where we help, is one where we don't allow this and that. It's a two-sided set of rules. And those rules don't diminish the love and the freedom. They create the framework so that we can truly embrace, truly release, truly allow our hearts to just shine, knowing that we'll protect one another. So, I now feel in this bubble of protection and of love. I'm honored that we can share this moment, whether live or archived, to recalibrate, remember, reconnect, and hopefully hold ourselves to higher standards, hold our worlds to higher standards. Be aware that we live in the worlds that we expect of ourselves and of our community. And I expect miracles. I expect open-hearted people. I expect you. And the universe has been so generous to share this with us. What a gift. Thank you. I love you. Let's have Hug Nation. Grab yourselves by the shoulders. What a gift to be housed in this incredibly sensual nerve cell of the universe, to receive the sights, sounds, to experience the emotions, to feel the vibrations and flow and love from other people. What a gift. And how important to be aware that our roles and identities and the path that we've walked for all of our lives has sometimes created an awareness outside of who we really are, a personality that we sometimes let lead us. And so it's important once in a while to strip that away, remember who you are, remember that you are pure light and love, and that you play the game of that personality, and you can change, you can redefine. As an edge starts to feel abrasive, you can sand it down. As a relationship starts to feel toxic, you can excise it. And we need to forgive ourselves when we become the sharp corners, and forgive everyone else for when they get caught up in their personalities and roles. And when those shells that surround us start to clack, clack, clack against each other, recognize that our centers, our pure lights, are identical, are pieces of the same one, that we are all part of the single play, the single organism, the single light. Let's just take a couple breaths together as that oneness. Let's make it three breaths. In through the nose. On behalf of Grandpa Caleb and all the Love Warriors, happy Hug Nation. Thank you for walking your truth, defending your light, and being you in the world. What a gift. I love you. Namaste.